We are beginning a series on the book of James. I'm excited. This series is going to go through the book of James in different ways. And before we get started, I'd like to give you a background of James. You know, a lot of times we read the books of the Bible and we may not have curriculum, we may not know, we may be new to the Bible. And so I'd like to give a little bit of background of James, give you a little bit about the audience, give you guys his perspective of what we're dealing with here. So James is the half-brother of Jesus, as in born from Mary and Joseph, right? So he's the half-brother. Now what's interesting is that although James was in the same home growing up as Jesus, he did not believe he was the Messiah until after the resurrection. Because it says in 1 Corinthians 12 that he did not believe. It said even his own brothers did not believe in him in John 7, 5. And so we know that James was a skeptic of his own brother, that he was the true Messiah. But obviously after the resurrection, Jesus came back to life. Here he is in this state. All believed. All had doubts as well, but all believed after that resurrection. What's interesting about the book of James is that a lot of scholars also point out that when you translate the Greek translation to James from his name in the Bible, it actually is not necessarily James as the first English translation. It's more like Jacob or Jake, but they still use James, and there's a big debate over that. Some people say, well, that was because King James wanted his name in it to be authorized in the King James Version. It's an interesting study if you ever want to get into it. But the bottom line is this. James was a half-brother of Jesus. James was a servant of God. And James was a very high respected figure in the early church. We talked about pillars of the church. We talked about Simon Peter. We talked about the weaknesses of Simon Peter and the strengths of Simon Peter and how Jesus reinstated him and said, you will be a big part of the early church, a pillar. James was another pillar. And so we're going to look into the book of James and see what he's talking about. James, when writing this, he's writing it to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. These are primarily Jewish Christians. And during this time, they were going through some very hard situations. This was scattering and persecution of the early church. Kind of like the Apostle Paul, who was formerly Saul and was persecuting the church himself. It was this kind of situation. It was life or death in many cases. They did not like Jesus Christ being proclaimed in the early church. But James was a highly respected person. And so the people in these times were going through trials. And James made that very clear, how to face those trials. We're going to talk about trials today. And the title of this sermon is called Pushing Towards Perseverance. You know, when you're a pastor or you serve in any type of leadership in the church, or really, if you're just anyone who has a loved one or care for people, if you get a call in the middle of the night, it's usually not good, especially as a pastor. You get a call in the middle of the night, it's usually something that is tragic, something that is an emergency or maybe a fatality. It's usually not good news. And I've already faced a few trials as in these situations, and I remember distinctly two times getting phone calls of deaths, but also seeing the trial with my own eyes. And one was a situation where a gentleman was going into surgery, and during the surgery he had complications and passed away, and so the doctors had to come in and give the news. It was very tragic for the family, and I was present there. There was also a time a couple of years ago where there was a situation where I went to the hospital or I got a call, an individual is having surgery and they're having a routine procedure done. So I went up to see them at the hospital, and I'll never forget this. I went into the room and I started talking to this individual, and I knew him and his wife very well, great friends, grew up around them both, and just they're like family to me. Before he was going to go into surgery the next day, his wife stepped outside to take some phone calls, and as I was talking to this individual, as I was talking to him, he went into cardiac arrest. And 30 minutes later, he didn't make it. That changed me. I'll never forget having to call his wife, who was literally down the hall, outside of the hospital taking calls, and having to tell her that her husband is currently trying. He's fighting for his life. You never forget those scenes. You never forget the noises, the sounds, the doctors running in, trying to revive them. It was just like in a movie. It was surreal. And 30 minutes later, we went back into the room, and the doctor said, "We did all we can do." And the gentleman that I was talking about old memories, was a shell of a body at midnight on a Monday night in Dallas, Texas. And I remember thinking to myself, life will never be the same. It was hard on me, but it was even harder on his wife because she loved him dearly. And I remember thinking to myself, how is his family going to get through this? And it didn't make sense to me because this family started going to church. They started getting closer to God. They started doing right things. It was like the Lord was turning things around, helping them get back to where they need to be. And then tragedy strikes, and it split everything back. Those are things you don't forget. And we've all faced trials and situations like that where it was tragic. Some tragedies are slow. They take time. It's a slow hurt. I want to help you understand how to handle that. Some tragedies are fast and quick. Some of them are slow. We call them storms. It's a slow storm. It's a fast storm. Some people I've heard say, you're either going into a storm, you're in a storm, you're going out of a storm. But the bottom line is, how to face any situation, James gives us this instruction, and he gives it to the audience who are facing these trials. And he says in James 1, verses 2 through 4, this is what he says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." The definition of perseverance is persistence in doing something despite difficulty or delay in achieving success. Perseverance must finish its work in order to be perseverance, which brings me to my first point on perseverance, which is endurance produces fruit in our lives. I'll say it again. Endurance produces fruit in our lives. You have to be able to work through and learn endurance before you can get perseverance. Paul knew just what this was in Romans 5. He says, "We can rejoice too," in verse 3, "that when we run into problems and trials, for we know that they help us develop endurance. And endurance develops strength of character, and character strengthens our confident hope of salvation." Here's another thing that we have to have in order to gain perseverance, which is patience. Oh boy. Anybody not have patience? I'll raise my hand. Yeah. But everybody's pretty much agreeing on that. I remember growing up, Pastor Bill, he would say, everybody need patience, and you need it right now. Right now you need patience. Right this second. That was me. I wanted patience. I never could get it. It took me a long time to develop patience. The only way I myself learned how to be patient was to endure those situations and persevere. Hebrews 10:36 says it this way, "Patient endurance is what you need now, so that you will continue to do God's will. Then you will receive all that he has promised." I still talk to the wife of the individual who passed away at the story. And I'm telling you, folks, she went through a lot. I mean, it was just a tragedy. Not only she just lost her husband, but there was a lot of conflict, and she had to handle a lot of things. And it just didn't make sense. The easiest thing to do at that point was to hold a grudge against God and say, "Why did you do this to me? Why did you take away my husband? Why did you break apart pretty much everything that I was relying on?" And all she had was family and faith. But you know what she says when we sometimes talk about those times? She says, "Sean, those were terrible times for me, but my faith has never been stronger." She learned perseverance. And through that, she received pure joy. Push towards perseverance. Otherwise, or in other words, rely on God and go. When you have faith and endurance, you are on the right track. You have to start with that in order to achieve perseverance. Endurance is good for Christians because, believe it or not, trials are not just for us to suffer. Trials are not just for us to be in pain and earn it the hard way. Because trials do not have to be seen as tribulations to us, but a testing. And which brings me to my second point, which is trials can also be tests, or trials can also be a test. A test is given to a student. A test is given to a student to pass, not pass out. You know what I'm saying? A test is something that we can achieve and have reward for it. I went Thursday to the Stafford Elementary Assembly. First time I've been in the elementary school since I graduated, which is sad, but it's true. And I went and saw two wonderful kids that come to this church. One was Riley, and Riley received some awards, but another one was Gabriel. And I was so proud of Gabriel. He got a lot of awards. Matter of fact, he was the top reader in the fifth grade. Top reader, number one. And it was so good that the person who gave him the award noted how high his score was. You see, Gabriel was honored by his hard work. Gabriel was honored for the good things that he did. It was a test, and he passed it. He also received another award for getting three questions or less wrong on the test that is taken every year. That's outstanding. He took the test, and he achieved it. Why? Because he worked hard, he studied, and he's a brilliant guy. But he worked hard and he studied for it. You have to be able to know the curriculum in order to pass the test. And he did. And I tried to take a picture of him, and he saw me, and he started waving during the picture. He was happy, boy. He had pure joy. In a lot of ways, that's how we as Christians can also face trials. It's a test. And if we do it correctly, not only will we pass, but we'll receive an honor for it. And we will receive pure joy. Because James says, consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of all kinds. Now, there's different types of trials. I know this personally because I was preaching in a prison, and I was actually preaching here this morning, and then I had a prison service that evening. And so I was preaching about that, and I asked everybody, I said, raise your hand if you've ever been through a trial before, thinking a trial like this. And so, yeah, I had some response. And so I went to the prison, I preached that night, and I asked the same question. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking at a bunch of guys in jumpsuits being asked if they've ever faced a trial. I said, oh, Lord. Wrong kind of trial. We've all faced different types of trials, and it was very embarrassing. But we still laugh about it. And they did, too. But trials range. Whether it's a court trial or a spiritual trial. But we all face trials. Trials should be faced with an attitude of joy. James made that very clear. And when you do that, you receive one of the fruits of the Spirit, which is joy. Pure joy. You have to have the mentality, first off, that God will get you through this trial. And that you will receive pure joy through this trial. You begin to develop trust and you begin to develop faith, and you begin to get stronger and stronger. But whenever we face trials with groaning and complaint, you don't gain perseverance. You gain bitterness. You get upset. And eventually, you give up. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Christian maturity is a lot like being a sports athlete. You have to be able to work for it and earn it. Now, the difference between that is, in athletes, there's a lot of athletes out there, and nowadays you have to be a certain height and a weight, and you have to be able to jump a certain amount. You know, they go through all those very specific things, but the bottom line is this: if you want to be a person who's in shape, you have to work for it. You have to push towards perseverance. You start off small, and every day you gain perseverance, work through the pain, and you gain results. I looked up a statistic on gym attendance on New Year's Day. Anybody have resolutions every year? Yeah, maybe a little bit. I always kind of chuckle to myself because, you know, if you go to the gym every day, you'll see that the first week of January, boy, it's packed. You better get there early. You may have to wait in line just to get on the treadmill, right? I mean, it's pretty big stuff. For some reason, our brain works that way. It's like a new year, so we're going to have a new start. It's okay. We all think like that. I think like that, too. But what's funny is if you go back in week three, there ain't nobody there. Because we all, most of us have already gotten rid of our resolution. And we said, eh, not for it. So I looked this up out of curiosity. How bad is it that we give up on stuff like that on resolutions? And this is what I found. 42% say it's too difficult to follow a diet or workout regimen. 38% say it's too hard to get back on track once they fall off. And 36% say it's just too hard to find time. Nearly half of those people gave up before reaching their fitness resolution goal within 6 weeks or less. That was nearly two-thirds of adults in the United States give up. Has anyone ever heard those excuses before? Yeah, absolutely. I know I've said them. What about spiritually? What about when you face endurance? Isn't it easy to sometimes say, my plan for reading scripture is just too difficult. I don't understand the Bible. I don't understand this. Or maybe it's say it's too hard to get back on track. I've fallen off. I had a moral failure. I had some kind of sin in my life and I didn't get rid of it. And I'm just going to give up because I can't get back on track because God does not forgive me for it. That was my final chance. Or you say, and this is the one I hear the most, it's just hard to find time. Oh, Pastor, I just don't have time. I don't have time to pray about it. I don't really have time. It's just hard for me to focus. That's how we work. We have distractions all around us. We have things that we have to do. I understand that completely. But the bottom line is if we don't do this, our faith will not be exercised. We will not gain strength. We will not gain endurance. We will not fight through it. And therefore, we will not receive results. We have to be ready for endurance. We have to be ready to take the test. Don't be mad if you're going through a trial right now, because you can receive joy through it. It's also easy to compare. You know how it is. It's easy to look over to the next person and see that everything's going great for them. We all think about this if you go to the gym again, going back to the reference. And you're sitting there and you're just starting to work out, you know, and you got like the fives or the 2.5 dumbbells and you're working out, you know. And then you got this guy over here, he's, you know, using 100-pound dumbbells, you know, and he's sitting in the mirror flexing his arms. You know what I'm talking about, those guys with those huge arms, you know, look like Popeye, but their legs look like olive oil, you know, they're about that big. You guys know. And you're sitting over there and you're going, I can't stand that guy. He's showing off in front of me. We're comparing ourselves to that individual. Now, I know I just said the stereotypical gym fanatic. You're sitting there with a six-pack, but it's a six-pack of soda, and you're trying to figure out why you can't get to those results. I can tell you, just to be honest with you, they learned perseverance, and they stuck with the plan, and they're proud of what they achieved. It's easy for us to compare others in our spiritual walk. It's easy for us to look at another individual and see, like, it looks like everything's going well. But I can tell you that if a person who's living for God and it's going well, they've probably gone through a trial too. They may not have experienced the pain that you've experienced directly, but they know and they've learned perseverance. And they receive pure joy through it. They got stronger. They got better. They passed the test. And they're ready for the next one. As James readers established themselves in their new surroundings, they faced many trials. The two biggest were poverty and persecution. They were wondering if they had enough to eat, and they were wondering if they were going to survive because of their faith. Those are two very big things. But you know, James had in mind all kinds of difficulties and threats. How about our faith in God? How about sickness? How about the death of loved ones? How about your child or rebellious child or your hated job that you you've been working at for years and years, and then you finally work to that point, you think you get that promotion, and then someone goes around you. You just don't like your job. You're trying to find a way out, but there's no other ways. And it's easy for us to get into this mindset of God is punishing me for this. Why is this happening to me? Why are these things going on? Friends, I have encouragement for you, and that is take it with pure joy, learn perseverance, and you will see God will provide for you in His way, in His timing, in His plan. You will pass the test, you will face the trial, and you will be rewarded for it, and you will receive pure joy. Whatever the trial is. And by recognizing that God can use these problems and you can get through this with trust and faith in the Lord because He is faithful, you will then, as James said, will become mature and complete. Consider it joy, brothers and sisters, when you face trials. And so if you're facing a trial today, it's very simple. You can reap the benefits of this test. You may not be facing a trial right now. Things may be very good. Be ready. Because you may. It's very possible. Jesus said to His disciples, you will face this. Now that was the disciples many years ago. But I know a lot of people in this audience that's faced trials. I've seen you pass the test. But sometimes they just come out of nowhere and they hit you hard. Sometimes it hurts so bad, it physically hurts your stomach. You're in so much pain, emotionally and spiritually, that you're just in so much grief. But then you cry out to God and say, Lord, I need you. Holy Spirit, come through. I need you. And He meets us. Remember, the Holy Spirit gives us peace when we have no peace. He gives us understanding when we have no understanding. He gives us joy when we have no joy. If all this sounds crazy to you, I'm going to be pretty straight up with you guys. If all this sounds crazy, if you're thinking, this guy's nuts, he's saying these things because there's no way you can face joy through trials, you are probably not persevering. You're probably just taking it in the face and staying down. And the chances are you're not passing the test. You're trying to face the trial on your own. Figure it yourself. It's affecting your thoughts. You begin to think about it. It may be affecting your health, your faith. Friends, I'm telling you, you can still pass the test if you simply just say, Lord, here it is. I surrender. I give it to you. I'm not trying to say that you're a bad person. That's the way we think. Right. We want to fix it ourselves and do it our way. But you may not be passing that test if you're going through those trials currently. When you find joy and patience and trust in God, you will pass the test, you will have stronger faith, you will learn endurance, and you will persevere. And the next time you will push towards perseverance. And then you'll be able to receive the fruit of the Spirit, which is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And I challenge you today to take those steps if you have not. You will find pure joy, just as James has described to his believers. I challenge you today to take those steps if you have not. You may know somebody that's going through a trial right now and they just don't understand. I'm going to be honest with you, friends. I don't have an answer for everything. I don't. Some things are unexpected and we'll never have an answer. And if we continue to think, why, God? We eventually will not receive joy ever. God's a God of peace. He wants you to come to Him. He wants you to endure it. He wants to show you pure joy. He wants to show you pure joy. But you have to push towards perseverance.